difficulty of 10. And Nunes is an absolute magician. He set up.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm not even going to cut to the chase on the intros. We've got a special guest with us today, folks. Chris Carlson is here. I'd assume most of the fan base knows Chris, but welcome to the pod. Steve Haller here with me as always, Pregler and DeGuzman. So what's going on, guys?
I think we're just happy to have Chris on so that we don't have to talk about what happened in Blacksburg this week.
Boy. Yeah, we're there.
We'll talk about the reason to be to maybe be positive about the future, I guess.
This is the first time Syracuse has had a glass half full look over a past week that it went as badly as it did.
This is the first time we've had a pod where we're remotely thinking about glass half full in a long time. So,
yeah, this is for those peeking behind the curtain. Chris has been in communication with multiple members of the Nunes Magician staff over his time covering Syracuse sports, which I'm not even trying to guess on how long that's been at this point. But yeah, Chris, if you want to out yourself for how long you've covered Syracuse sports, be my guest. But I think it's safe to say, even without the exact number, you are probably one of the most consistent voices in the local media, whether it's, you know, you've covered different beats, you've covered the sport in general. I know now you've kind of moved off of sports specifically and kind of cover a whole bunch of different stories, but you got our attention this week with the NIL features that went up, which was really the impetus for bringing you on. And again, we really appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating subject. And I mean, I think the thing I've probably talked to you guys the most over the years about is athlete compensation. Pendulum has swung substantially there from athletes are really getting hosed to, I don't know where we're at right now in terms of that.
Some athletes are making some bank is definitely where
let's put it this way. We're not discussing if an athlete can work at the YMCA or not.
Yeah.
Very true.
Okay. Not too soon, but still hurts.
Oh, but it does. I mean, it is just like everything we've talked to. Everything that's been like a big deal in college sports outside of North Carolina, which somehow the NCAA ignored, has somehow like it all just looks small potatoes now, right? Like, I mean, we're talking about like, you know, $1 million recruits. Like,
I mean, we're talking about a recruit who sat courtside and flew in on a private jet. There's a lot of weird
with two rappers as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a whole lot of weird happening in that night.
There's a lot of weird things happening. I think Chris, this is a great time to just like dive into this with you for those who might be like, let's pretend like I know we have some Syracuse fans here who have not been paying attention to a ton of NIL stuff, because to be quite frank, Syracuse has not exactly been as put together as some of their compatriots in the ACC or within the college landscape. So let's really quickly break down what it was that you wrote about this week and Syracuse's kind of standing in this new NIL world, based off of, you know, the reporting that you've been doing as of late.
Sure. So, I mean, the historical lens, right? College sports changed substantially in July of 2021. When the NCAA allowed, well, it's forced to allow athletes to start to make money off their name, image, and likeness. Initially, everybody was saying, "Oh, yeah, this will be great. You know, athletes can be in commercials and sell T-shirts with their faces on it." Not surprisingly, folks have taken advantage of the idea that you can, you know, pay athletes to find all sorts of things to pay them for, and very inflated amounts to pay them for, their name, image, and likeness. It is not something that the schools are supposed to be directly involved in, which sort of complicates things. You know, when you say Syracuse is behind, it's also not necessarily their administration's job to create a collective to pay athletes. So it was more the alumni base or the boosters that were behind more than the school. Although you could certainly argue that the school should have been encouraging more aggressive behavior and you know, getting involved. Adam Weitzman, local scrap metal magnate and Instagram influencer and billionaire and Jim Boeheim's best friend, has jumped into that absence and has decided that, that, you know, he is going to pay athletes to do charity work. The contracts he's paying are, you know, he's talked about one of them is a multi-year deal worth seven figures. Elijah Moore, the recent recruit, he said he has a six-figure deal with Elijah with incentives that could bring it to seven figures. And that money, theoretically, is going to pay him to do some charity work. No specified number of hours, no specified charity. You can guess whether anyone else in the world would be paid that much money to do charity work. But, you know, Syracuse is just joining the club here. I mean, it's they're not alone. Adam is not alone in doing this. He is one of the few that is openly doing this, which, like, I appreciate. You know, the only guy who's been more open about it is John Ruiz in Miami,
right?
Who's paying athletes to endorse his companies, and like he's putting the numbers out there. Like, he is putting the numbers on Twitter. Just this is what the deal is. Mm-hmm. So he's the only guy who's being more open and transparent about what he's doing than Adam. And as a journalist, like, I'm good with that.
makes things a little easier for you.
I mean, what good is it, right?
Right.
What good is it to have it underground as a sports fan? Why would you want it underground as a sports fan? Actually going on.
Right. We've had it underground for the last 40 years. Like, it's been happening. It's not like this is something new. It's just now they can do it in the open, so you might as well. Like, it's advertising, effectively.
It's also weird to hear you call Adam Weitzman a Instagram influencer nowadays, just where we are in the landscape of social media.
In the immortal words of Louis Van Gaal, what is this world twisted?
Yeah, no kidding. Chris, what I still find it weird that I and you've dived into this in your article that, you know, that since Weitzman is so open about, there's just probably concern about, you know, because we are in the twisted world of what's legal and what's not in the NCAA, if this is still all allowed. So what kind of fine lines is he treading here with being as open as he is?
Sure. So the NCAA has put forward very few sort of guidelines or requirements. Part of that is because the more guidelines and requirements they put forward, the more likely they are to be challenged in court, and the more likely they are to lose, and the more irrelevant they are to become. So they have put together a very small list of rules. One is that a booster is not supposed to be having conversations with recruits, recruiting-specific conversations about recruits. So Adam avoids that rule by saying that he does not talk about recruiting with the guys that he is offering deals to. He only talks about NIL. So you can't say I'm having a recruiting conversation if we're talking about NIL. You are not allowed to pay an athlete to play for a specific institution. Adam's contracts, he says, say you have to do charity work in the 315 or 607 area codes, and you have to live in those places. Now, there are other basketball teams in those places. None that any good recruit would want to play for. But, like, technically, like, you could go play at Lemoyne if you wanted to.
Another one of those teams did beat us this year. So, he could become a Colgate booster.
Exactly.
A fair point. But traditionally, no place that a recruit would want to play basketball other than Syracuse. So, you know, what does the NCAA think about these justifications? I don't know. You know, the NCAA doesn't comment on specific, you know, circumstances, at least to me. Adam says he's in communication with SU's compliance department, which you would think would give them the opportunity to say, A, like, you can't do that. So I think he's just like, nobody knows what the rules are until somebody gets in trouble. And then we'll start to figure out what people can actually get in trouble for.
Right. And I guess that's one thing is, you know, the day Moore signs his LOI, like, is the NCAA going to come knocking of like, hey, by the way, all that stuff you did, we're toast. I mean, wouldn't be the first time, wouldn't be the second time either. So what the hell? For you two youngins, remember back in the day, there was another NCAA sanction. So yeah, it's not a program without its own warts. And is this going to come back to haunt, you know, now that we're in the Wild West?
So my gut instinct, and I am somebody who said the NCAA was going to hammer North Carolina because they couldn't not, because right. Otherwise, what are we doing here? And I was wrong, dead wrong, right? Yep. So everything I say.
A lot of other people.
Yeah, I was going to say all four people on this podcast would have said the same thing right now. Yeah. So.
So, you know, they are a unpredictable organization at best. But I do, like, I think that they need a slam dunk case to charge anybody. Like, they are going to need to get somebody doing specifically what they told them not to do. Like we told you, you could not do this specific thing, and you did it anyway, and you didn't care before they really punish somebody. And Weitzman is operating in this gray area that nobody has defined. Presumably, I believe, with a number of other people, you know, so are you going to take a, you know, are you going to make Syracuse a scapegoat? You know, I guess it's possible, but like I just, you know, as a journalist, I would crush the NCAA. I would want to crush the NCAA for that because he is operating the way that lots of other people are operating in the landscape right now.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. This past week, Split Zone Duo, which is a podcast that used to be part of the SB Nation umbrella, is no longer part of the SB Nation umbrella. Stephen Godfrey, who was a journalist who covered the pay-for-play scandal down in Mississippi pre-NIL, has kind of become somewhat of an expert in this area, was talking about this concept that the NCAA right now has no idea what it's doing, because you basically created a whole new marketplace. And in capitalism in general, when you create a whole new marketplace, the world goes absolutely nuts and it's entirely unregulated. See cryptocurrency as the most recent non-sports example of this. But then instead of having a government in charge of it, you have the NCAA, which is infinitely worse at doing the job of governance. And up until, I think, 3 months ago, had no one even like in charge of the NCAA in a commissioner role. So we're talking about an organization that hasn't even had a like leader trying to police this entire thing and create these rules that are clearly not being followed. But at the end of the day, like Chris, one of the things that I did want to kind of get into you with is that you and Sean Keeley were two of the loudest voices on the Syracuse internet, talking about, like, what are we doing not paying these players or trying to pay these players in, like, Nike sweatpants and shoes and all these other things that were allowed but weren't, you know, we weren't allowed to give them cash. And I don't think that you got into this a ton, but I am interested if this is something that's kind of come up in conversation, is when we look at NIL at a school like Syracuse, like, what we know that someone like Elijah Moore is coming in with expectations and coming in with contracts, but there's probably hundreds of student athletes at Syracuse that do not fit into that umbrella and are trying to make a way for themselves. And so I'm just kind of curious, throughout your reporting and throughout your investigating here, if there were any conversations about, you know, the other 90% of students at Syracuse that are either on one of those high visibility revenue sports teams but aren't getting major deals, or are on the Olympic sports that obviously have some, like, they're student athletes too. They have some kind of market potential. It's just not, you know, basketball.
Sure. So I am going to be covering sort of NIL as a beat. We've decided it is going to be sort of the shaping force in college sports until they shift to probably cutting the athletes in on revenue. You know, but this is going to be a determining factor in how successful programs are, from recruiting to retaining players. There will be, you know, legal components. So it's an issue that I moved back to sports at the start of the new year. And this was part of that switch.
Nice.
Is making this a beat.
That's awesome.
Welcome back.
Yes.
Yep. So I talked to Adam a little bit about, I mean, he has deals with a number of other athletes in addition to the recruiting. The recruiting is sort of the diciest area in terms of, like, could this go bad or could we get in trouble? And it's probably the most interesting for fans. But he has 13 deals with SU athletes. Most of them are basketball players. There were 8 basketball players. But he also has a deal with Deja Fair. He has a deal with Elijah Clark. He is going to have one, he says, with Marlo Wax, which, good news for football fans, probably means Marlo Wax is not going anywhere. And, you know, he would have been an attractive guy. We saw players leave, right? You know, this is part of players staying, potentially. You know, it's, Adam has not shared the numbers, so I don't know, like, what John Bol or Jacques gets, and sorry, John Bol, or Peter Carey, right? And if it's like, you know, is it pizza money? Is it a car money? I don't have a great sense of what
it's an extra. It's an extra pie from Mario and Salvo's after the game.
So right? when he said pizza money, all I could think of was if oh God,
Marek.
Yes, I went older, and my brain could only think of Christophe Olgenat. I was like, wait, no, wrong European. Hold on. But yeah, if Dolezal was around for NIL, would it strictly be with all of, like, every pizzeria in Syracuse?
Yeah.
Like, he just gets a cut from everybody.
Oh, my God.
I guess that was a long way of saying, Andy, I don't know much, but I hope to, like, learn, like, how it's impacting, like, some of the other athletes at the school, but I don't have a great sense for it right now. I asked about soccer because I saw Ian McIntyre gave him like gave Adam a shirt, and I was like, so did you any deals there? And he said not yet. He hasn't branched outside the big three yet.
Something I read in your article that I think is important for that Syracuse fans were probably going to want to know is where Syracuse is in terms of the NIL landscape as a university. And as you said, they've been careful and slow and introducing NIL. I say slow in quotation marks because it seems like other Power 5 teams have been much more aggressive in terms of launching NIL systems for their athletes. So is that necessarily the right move for Syracuse, given where we are in the NIL landscape?
To get in it, or
to go through it slowly?
Through it slowly? I think it's okay, right? As somebody who believes that athletes ethically should be paid, like, I am good with everybody, like, rushing into this market and paying guys. Like, good for you. If that's, like, if we're taking money from a billionaire and we're giving it to kids that aren't billionaires, like, I have no problem with that. Spread the wealth. And if that's what your collective is out there doing, cool. But I don't, outside of, like, right, they're catching up. Adam's in the game now. Did they hurt themselves competitively maybe for a year by being slow to it? Maybe. But is there any real long-lasting damage done by sort of going slow and making sure that, you know, hey, the NCAA really doesn't care about this? They're really not going to come down on anybody? Like, you know, following best practice, you know, following other people into the dangerous waters? Like we said, like, Adam isn't the only one doing this. He hired a lawyer who is very well-regarded in this field, very aggressive in finding ways to get athletes paid. But he knows what a lot of other schools in the country are doing, and Syracuse is following sort of that. Contracts are shaped the same way. Maybe they're not flying guys on jets with rappers. That might be a Syracuse thing. But I don't think it's like a huge problem as long as they do get in the game now. And as long as like there are people outside of Adam that are willing to like step up and play. Because you don't want one. I was talking with I forget which one of the lawyers I was talking to about this, but like, you don't want to rely on charities, which is what SU's collectives are right now, because they can only pay players so much, or like you're not a charity. Like if you're a charity and you're stroking like $1 million checks, like you're not a charity. Like you can't do that. And if you have one person who is your entire program, like that one person has immense power over your school at that point. So, like, you can't alienate that one person, or if you do, like, you're starting from ground zero and you have to build up the NIL program all over again. So I think it's okay to go slow. I don't think that there's any real long-term damage done, but like they have to keep going. Like Adam can't be it. They need other people to sort of join Adam and not have him on the solo quest.
I think that took a great follow-up from me, like, because it seems like other schools, just from at the outside looking in without looking in too much or reading in too much, it have other boosters and multiple boosters who are willing to shell out the NIL money. Is it right now just a solo quest for Syracuse in which Adam Weitzman is the only one who's really willing to shell out these contracts for these players, these NIL contracts for these players, or are there other people who are in it at least right now?
It is hard. There are other people in it. Cliff Ensley, a former football player, Ensley Center, right? A big donor to the school. Started a collective that is doing it the charity way, which, you know, the number there that one of the lawyers I talked to was like 20,000 to 50,000 is what you can like reasonably sort of stretch it to and have be paying the players like within reason, you know, not outlandish numbers for a charity. So Cliff is in that collective world. Mike Bristol, who is a spokesman for Jim Boeheim, the Jim and Julie Boeheim Foundation, helps Jim with some of his like outside basketball PR. He started a collective that also is doing charity that operates the same way. There is no like, other schools are doing like more for, a lot of other schools have like a for-profit collective, which does allow you to pool booster money and you're not restricted in your payments by the fact that you're a charity. You can operate more like Adam Weitzman operates as a collective. I mean, there has not been a Syracuse version that has at least come forward publicly and sort of claimed they're doing anything. At the same time, I mean, a lot of schools don't have guys doing things publicly, right? It's an anonymous report from Tennessee, and who came up with the $13 million figure, like, you know, or that was Florida. Who came up with the $8 million figure at Tennessee? Like, I don't know. Who came up with the $13 million figure at Florida? Like, I'm not sure. And what's going on in North Carolina, right? What did they, how much did they pay to get Armando and Caleb Love and RJ Davis and all those guys to stick around another year? We don't know, because you don't have to announce anything. So it is hard to tell. But so far, it does seem like it is largely those collectives, which are doing small amounts of money, sort of in the hopes of retaining players. And then Adam is the one who's throwing big money around. But there aren't that many schools that are throwing big money around publicly. You hear about it with some of the SEC schools, right? But that's pretty much it in terms of like who's actually like sharing the details and taking credit for what they're doing. Some of it's just we have to assume, you know, like Todd Carter, right? We haven't seen a number. I know he signed with the Ohio State Collective. I presume that number is healthy, but I don't know.
That's actually a really great, like, I was looking up, you know, the differences between the Syracuse collective structure and the Ohio State one, because the Ohio State one very famously has Cardale Jones as the public face of the collective. The infamous tweeted out, "I didn't come here to play school," is now running the NIL collective, which I feel like is...
That's fitting.
Yeah, that's just a hat on a hat right there. But they are all underneath one collective that was started with a $550,000 donation, and that collective has grown since then. It's basically like, hey, throw some money at this and we'll redistribute it to the players as necessary. And it's, Chris, to your point, it sounds like it's being run like a quote-unquote charity, where they're trying to, you know, you pool money in, you give the money to the players, and you find a way to, like, make that money worthwhile with an NIL in some way. Versus Syracuse, which has two different actively labeled foundations. The 315 Foundation, which is backed by a lot of the Jim Boeheim Foundation-backed donors as well, so you can see a lot of the overlap there. And then the other one is Athlete Who Cares, and that's the one that Ensley is running. So it certainly sounds like, the at least at Syracuse, we have two separate groups kind of working, one on behalf of basketball, one on behalf of football, and then Weitzman doing whatever the heck it is that he wants to do, which is different than, say, in Ohio State is running it. But it, like you said, there's not a ton of visibility on how other places are doing it. But all this is kind of like a prelude to say to the fact that it seems like Syracuse is at least actively trying here, which compared to some other previous things that Syracuse has done, like trying is a low bar to clear, but we're happy that they're clearing it. And I'm just kind of curious, as again, now that you're tipping your toe into this, now that you're becoming like a dedicated beat guy for this, have you looked out to the rest of the ACC at all to kind of see if there's any structures or any competitions that have arisen? Moore is probably, at least in my mind, the first big time recruit to come, probably specifically because of NIL. But I do know that Weissman has been pretty active on this 2024 recruiting trail, and I'm not sure who else had offers that maybe chose to go somewhere else, and that other place being an ACC rival.
So he, he had one offer out to, it was a 2023 player, Elliot Cadeau, who was a five-star guard, who ended up picking North Carolina. Adam said he started talking to Cadeau too late. And Cadeau had sort of already made up his mind that he was going to go to Chapel Hill, and the fact that he came in, you know, too late was the difference maker. I don't know if that's true or not, right? Like, you know, I don't know if Adam's deal was better or not, or if North Carolina has a bigger kitty than Weitzman has and is willing to go higher. You know, they also got Ian Jackson, the number two recruit in the country. So, like, you know, they're probably playing with some pretty big numbers, I would think, if you're landing those guys. I think a lot of it, like, we're going to find out, you know, where everybody is in the lay of the land. The charities, at some point, it'll be just like Syracuse, where they have to release, like, certain payments, you know, their five highest paid individuals, because that's a requirement on charities in this country. But, like, that's not going to tell the whole story either, because, like, there are schools that have collectives operating on their behalf that aren't registered charities. You know, like Adam doesn't have to say anything about his number. I just think we're all just going to follow recruiting, and we're going to assume that the schools that are getting the best players are probably paying the most money, because that's usually how it works.
What are some of the other differences between, like, the collectives that Syracuse and Ohio State have, and what Weitzman and John Gries are doing in terms of not only getting money to the players, but also how they just operate in general in terms of this whole NIL landscape?
I think it's not... I don't think they're operating tremendously different from each other outside of, like, who is funding them. Right, a collective is a way to get maybe the entire fan base involved, and Right, it's the athlete paying version of IPTE, the Clemson I pay $10 a year that they used to raise money for their athletic programs for so long. But I still think, like, ultimately, like, you know, you're when it's Ruiz or it's Weitzman, obviously they are targeting, they're picking the programs that they think are the most important, and supporting those programs. So we know Weitzman in basketball, right? Basketball is going to get the, you know, presumably, I think, you know, a huge percentage of Weitzman's support. Ruiz can pick whatever Miami sports he cares about and put the majority of his money there. He has like 110 athletes signed, I think. So like I do think he is distributing the wealth to some degree, but I'm sure the majority of it is going to pay football players, right? I mean, that seems like logical to me. Whereas, you know, some collectives where they're maybe a little bit more tied into the university and it's not just one individual, they might be a little bit more inclined to like support all the programs. Distribute the wealth to women's sports, distribute the wealth to non-revenue sports in a little bit more egalitarian way. I haven't seen the numbers on that, but that's just like a natural sort of gut instinct, I think. You know, and there have been deals from non-revenue sports from athletes from other schools who I think are benefiting from collectives that way. And I think like Cliff Ensley's collective, I believe, is going to get into the lacrosse. And so is going to try to help support lacrosse at some point. But it will be interesting to see sort of how much Syracuse helps the non-revenue sports that way.
You also, you talked about, you know, Jahad Carter transferring to Ohio State, Ruiz, you know, paying Nigel Pack $800,000 to get post moves from Joe Girard all game. So, like, what are the quote-unquote rules between recruiting guys out of high school with NIL and recruiting guys in a transfer portal with NIL? Because for Syracuse players, what we've mainly seen is Weitzman targeting, you know, high school recruits, traditional high school recruits. But how does that work in the transfer portal as well?
It would be the same rules would apply to the same rules apply to a recruit to a transfer. So whatever conversations John Ruiz had with Nigel Pack, you know, I don't know if he's operating under the same rationale as Adam, that we didn't talk about recruiting. We just talked about NIL opportunities. You know, Jim Larrañaga talked to him about playing basketball at Miami. I'm just talking about NIL. I don't know if he used that same justification, but technically the rules are the same. Like, a booster is not supposed to be, you know, getting in a player's DMs saying, hey, I'll give you $500,000 to come over here. That said, right, we all know go-betweens have, if a coach isn't doing it or the booster isn't doing it, booster or the coach might be talking to a high school coach or an AAU coach.
We've all seen blue chips.
The world of go-betweens and football for years. So you can, right. One of the rules that is crazy is, coaches can't tell boosters who to pursue. We can all come up with 1,000 ways that a booster might be tipped off without the coach directly telling him, this is who I want you to get, right? It could be a team manager. It could be somebody they both know. It could be a recruiting site. Not to mention if they go out to dinner and nobody has bugged their table. Like, you know, like, yeah, we want this guy, right? I mean, you know.
Could you imagine someone bugging Boeheim's table at Delmonico's just to hear which recruits he wants to go after?
That would be some FBI level genius.
Oh, that's incredible.
You getting ideas now, Christian?
You know, it's just the world of plausible deniability, right? Which is, I don't know, is sort of why the whole thing has been dumb. And why, like, I don't know. This is a victimless crime, right? Like, if you are cheating, like, players getting paid and fans are happy, and a billionaire has a little less money, and, like, I don't know, the other victims are, like, I guess schools and coaches, but and other programs, but like, I don't know, they're also the same people that tried to keep athletes from making money for so long. So,
right.
I like the system better.
So, Pregler, since where we are on time, I just want to say, since Chris is talking about victims, I will say that this week my
yes.
wallet was a victim of the home field apparel sale.
Mine as well.
So yeah, if anyone missed it on Tuesday, the new collection from Home Field Apparel, our sponsor, dropped, and it was pretty insane, to the point where various joggers and other sweatshirts are coming to my house. So between my wife and I, we had to barter for who got the joggers, who got the sweatshirt. So it was solid.
The home field Syracuse collection that expired on Friday. If you didn't grab it, there are still some wonderful Syracuse things up at Home Field Apparel, our sponsor as always, and a participator in NIL, not for Syracuse, but for their beloved Indiana. Make sure you use promo code Nunes, N-U-N-E-S, for 10% off your first order at Home Field Apparel. And as always, they're the comfiest clothing providers of vintage Syracuse stuff out there. Give them a look if you haven't already. Chris, things that are vintage. This is a really bad segue. Things that are vintage include Jim Boeheim, and you have covered Jim Boeheim for a very long time relative to the rest of us here. I'm just curious. It's a little bit NIL, a little bit not. Like, we've seen a lot of older coaches, specifically in basketball, step aside because they saw the writing on the wall, that this was going to fundamentally change the way that they built programs, built teams, basically thought about the long-term vision of their program. And I think a lot of them decided, got enough rings, got enough money, I am good to sit this one out. Jim Boeheim, being the man that he is, did not choose to sit this one out. Obviously, you've spent a lot of years on the basketball beat in some way, shape, or form covering him that way. You've spent time covering Syracuse, and his position in the athletic department is really well defined. I'm just kind of curious as to your thoughts or your perceptions on, not necessarily is Jim Boeheim going to retire?
Close to retiring, just more of a is. Where do you think he sits in this whole NIL world where it's just so different and he's stubbornly hanging on when so many of his compatriots were like, this just isn't worth it?
I think Jim is such a pragmatist. He's fought every athlete compensation thing since I've been covering him for a decade, right? Everything he's fought against in terms of athletes getting paid outside of, I don't remember if he supported maybe the stipends eventually. So I'm sure he's not thrilled with the landscape, but I do think he's just like, well, if that's how everybody else is going to like do it, like, fine, we'll do it, and I'll coach the team. And that's what I've always done, and that's what I'll always do. It is interesting. I do wonder if this had happened when he was in, like, a good stretch, if his choices might have been different, right? Jay Wright left, but, like, Villanova's sort of on top of college basketball. Roy Williams left. North Carolina had won a national championship very recently. Coach K left. Duke was certainly in great shape. Syracuse is not. And I'm sure everybody wants to leave on a high note. So I do have no insight, right? He does not trust me with his innermost thoughts. But from a purely curious standpoint, like, I do wonder if the program was in a different state, if he would have also decided, like, this is not worth the aggravation of doing. But I don't know. He is also, like, out of all of them, Like, he is the basketball lifer, who it is hard, who, right, he goes home and he watches basketball. He talks about it. He's watching NBA all the time. He, that is who he is and what he does. So, I don't know.
Along the same lines of, like, the landscape changing, especially since this is Adam Weitzman and Jim Boeheim and basketball, one of the things that I think you have to look at, especially with basketball, is changes to the one-and-done rule in the NBA that, you know, have been rumored for, I don't know, the past few years at this point now. Whether that comes, you know, sooner rather than later. How might, especially for Syracuse basketball, since, like you said, Weitzman is pretty much focusing all his NIL focuses right now towards basketball players. How does that change, or how might that change how the NIL like landscape is distributed at Syracuse, especially?
We're talking about players not having to go at all, or a baseball version where it's three or whatever.
I mean, it's so weird for me because I always like the baseball rule of, you know, you either go straight out of high school or you stay 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, who knows what the NBA is going to do? So, like, I can't answer that either.
I don't think that the NBA is going to, like, go for that. You know, like, I don't think NBA players want to see college players restricted in that way. I don't think that will happen. But I do think, like, I mean, I do think that players might stay in college longer, right? You might not. There might be fewer one-and-done guys. Because if you're going to be a late first rounder, if you're going to be a second rounder, and your school has somebody who is willing to pay you like second rounder, but you can stay in school where you're having fun and not have to do the G League thing, but play in front of Carrier Dome crowds, right? Like that is a more appealing thing. I know college has changed substantially since then, but like I remember how hard it was for Carmelo to leave this. Like he was legitimately torn, and he was a top three pick. And I know now, you know, it would be like a no brainer. But like, I think that shows you that like some kids are going to be torn, and some kids are going to decide that college is a better place to play a second year, and rather than go one and done. I don't know if that quite answered your question. To me, that'll be an interesting change. Is if those borderline first round, those second round guys will stick around longer than they were before.
I think that along the same lines, like how does that affect like the quote unquote contracts that we've been seeing? Like we've said, Ruiz gave Pack a 2 year deal. Weitzman has reportedly offered multi-year deals to the recruits he's been after, including Elijah Moore. I'm not sure what kind of contract lengths he has right now with the current Syracuse players. How might that affect as well these quote-unquote NIL contracts that the players are getting from Weitzman, Ruiz, and other boosters?
So he has a multi-year deal with Deja Fair, but it does not require her to fulfill the terms of the contract. It is essentially like, if you are here, this is the offer. It is on the table for you. But it doesn't like restrict her from going to the WNBA. She doesn't have to buy her way out of like deal with Adam in order to go to the WNBA if she wants to go to the WNBA. So I can't imagine there are too many people that are putting restrictions in those contracts. I mean, it's possible, given that nobody makes them public, but I haven't heard of anybody who like can't go pro when they want to go pro because they've signed an NIL deal. I do think this would just be an intelligent thing to do, right? Is to escalate the value the longer somebody stays in school. So you get less money your freshman year, you backload it, right? I mean, just like to incentivize somebody to stick around. I have to think people are doing that. Like, that is just a smart, you know, smart roster management, in my opinion. I have to think that's something people will do, but I haven't heard of it. I haven't heard anybody talk about that. And Adam is, does not get particularly specific with the terms of his deals.
Sorry, I was muted there. I think that this is just like all kind of illustrated the general like brave new world that we've kind of entered in here. Like this whole thing is just still so remarkably undefined. And unlike a lot of schools, Syracuse has somebody who is willing to be very visibly front and center of this for whatever Adam's reasons might be. He's chosen this path and therefore we have to deal with it. I'm just kind of curious, like to get your final thoughts on this. As things kind of evolve and shift, do you think that Weitzman is going to continue to be in this role? Is this a time and place thing? Is it just there's just not enough information to say, or do you think that this is truly like a Ruiz at Miami situation where it's like this guy wants his legacy to be known as the booster for this school that I have chosen my attachment with? But because Weitzman, as you know, we've all chronicled before, is not in the same mold as a lot of other boosters where he attended the school, played sports at the school, and then went off and did his thing. Weitzman's connection to Syracuse is specifically tied to one James Arthur Boeheim, who, as we just covered, is going to be coaching for as long as he's physically able to be coaching.
I think Adam, and I haven't asked him this, and I am looking forward to asking him this. It's probably the question I wished I've asked him right now, and I haven't. But I do think that he will probably be a long time supporter and continue doing this. Now, is he incentivized to go big right now because he wants to make sure that like either Jim leaves the program in good shape or goes out on a high note? Yes, I think just like we saw with TBT, and he wanted to get Eric Devendorf a title in TBT, like he is very incentivized to do this right now. But I also think that like as he's gone to games, like he enjoys it. He talks about the Carrier Dome and like the mix of classes, and it's in he loves that it is part of Central New York, and that is part of Central New York's experience. And while his willingness to be out there might turn some off, like he does care about Central New York in a lot of ways and puts a lot of his money towards good causes and a lot of his energy towards good causes. So I do think that unless he gets turned off, which is admittedly a fear, right? If Syracuse turns him off in some way, maybe he'll walk away. But as long as that doesn't happen, I do think that he's a long-term supporter in some capacity, sort of in this NIL arms race. But like a lot of people have said, right, is this sustainable? Are boosters going to get tired of right, if he can't compete with the North Carolina collective and Elijah Moore is the highest rated prospect he gets, right, is that going to frustrate him, right? Just like no matter what he does, he can't get a top guy because it's just he's always going to get outbid. I do think there's a wait and see on that because that's possible, right? That it is possible that just he makes a bid and then every kid goes to North Carolina and says, hey, this is what Weitzman will pay me. Like, and North Carolina says, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll match it. Come to Chapel Hill, right? I mean, there's a very reasonable chance that's how everything plays out.
So you kind of mentioned it very early on. Like, what's next in terms of like who makes the next move? I'm assuming it's got to be the NCAA in terms of how they try and regulate NIL. Do they have to? Is it a point where they have to throw their hands up and like eventually, like sooner rather than later, it is okay? Athletes get a cut of the revenue, or like where are we going from here in terms of how NIL is getting regulated?
So I think both those things. I do think that the NCAA has to step in on NIL eventually and do something. It might not be right away because, like I talked about earlier, right? They might be waiting for someone to specifically violate some guideline that they've put out, and like there can be no arguing, there can be no gray. Like we told you not to do it, you did it. you know, but I do think that, that there's a desire and a want from the organization and the schools to put some constraints in, whatever they think they can get away with. But I do think the logical end game here is athletes getting a cut of revenue. I honestly, like, as a I try to put myself in the shoes of coaches and ADs. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. Like, if you cut athletes in on the revenue, you can get a little bit of control over roster management again, right? Like you can put in, if you negotiate it, right? If you collectively bargain rights, like, you can put in all the things people want from other sports. Like, you could have, I don't know if the athletes would go for this, but like, that's why you have a salary cap in other leagues, because it was negotiated and they agreed that there would be a salary cap in exchange for their cut of the revenue. You could negotiate a transfer rule, right, where if a player transfers, they, without like a good reason, they have to sit out a year. So all the fears that coaches have of boosters coming in and paying players to like jump ship, like, at least it becomes harder. Like, a player doesn't want to sit out a year, you know. So just think that is just the natural end game. And to me, the fascinating question, I was thinking about it right before I came on with you guys. If we do revenue sharing with athletes and they get their share from the school, will boosters still pay them? Like. You don't have Pirates fans, no offense, Andy, like taking up a collection to like pay Pirates players. It's like, no, they have an employer and the employer pays them, and like, that's how this thing works. Boosters still, once revenue sharing happens, still do this? I think so, but it's just very weird. It's very weird that is a place that we are.
I would assume yes, because once you get into the revenue sharing, it's like the schools are going to cut it the same for every player type thing, even though it's, you know, revenue sharing. Like, they're going to get whatever their cut is, and then the boosters will still give the above and beyond. So it'll just be they're making more money on top of the stupid money they're making from the boosters.
Andy's frantically trying now how to figure out how to keep O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds in Pittsburgh for the foreseeable future.
The Pirates were a bad example. Our owner is notoriously cheap and poor, but he is a baby billionaire by billionaire standards. I think Weitzman might actually have more money than him, just that he happens to have a more valuable asset. But, you know, actually, I don't know scrap. I don't know what scrap metal assets are these days, but... So I shouldn't even say that, you know. The newspaper business and the ski resort business in Pennsylvania are not exactly thriving industries for owning a sports franchise. It's not hedge fund money, to say the least.
Especially southern Pennsylvania for skiing.
Okay, we don't need to go into that side tangent here. We could be here all night. Chris, we've really appreciated the time that you've taken to chat with us. About this, I'm really excited to hear that you're going to be the NIL guy moving forward. This is going to mean that we're probably going to be seeing a lot more of you popping up in the timeline covering Syracuse sports. And so I'm just kind of curious to get you out of here and just kind of ask you, like, what is the one thing or something that you're kind of looking forward to now that you're returning to the sports beat, but not necessarily covering the game-to-game atmosphere of it? Because obviously... this season would not be ideal for that situation.
I think what am I looking forward to the most? I mean, this is largely it. I mean, you know, it is such a ripe, fascinating subject and will determine so much about how college sports goes. You know, the frustrating part is I don't know how much people are going to be talking to me, and I don't love the idea of like going up to 17-year-olds and asking like, how much are you getting paid? Like that, you know, that's part of sort of understanding the landscape, but it's also like a very awkward question because like nobody answers it, and it's a 17-year-old, and that part feels crappy. But sometimes you have to ask crappy questions. But I just think following this whole thing, it is a new marketplace. It is. Is fundamentally correcting a flaw and an unfairness in its own flawed way, which I think will be a really just sort of fascinating thing to watch.
Yeah, watching this pendulum swing is going to be, over the years, going to be great for you, because it, like you said, it's, you know, we started with nobody getting paid, now everybody's getting paid, and then where is it going to kind of come back to?
Is the market going to be bigger because like everybody realizes like they've been underpaid for so long, or is there a course correction where everybody's like, boy, this is, these first few years were dumb. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, I mean, you said it off the top, like this is where the sport's going from a coverage standpoint. This is going to be interesting. There's going to be like, there's no open database of like how much everybody's getting paid. I'm sure that's going to get start putting together. Someone's going to put together a salary cap tracker type thing for players, NIL deals. It's going to be the new thing that happens. And Syracuse is obviously going to be at the forefront of it, whether we like it or not, thanks to the people that have chosen to be involved.
It'll also be very interesting how much recruiting actually changes.
Yeah.
Or if it's just, or if everything is still the same. Like, right? Like,
yeah.
Which would be evidence of something else that this is, right?
Absolutely.
Of what we all think. This has been happening in some way for so long, and it's really not that dramatic a change.
Yep. As long as we don't end up in, like, MLS territory with GAM and TAM and just made up money.
Oh, my God, please, no.
I think we should be okay for a while.
The different types of currencies and going into college football would be legitimately the worst thing that I could imagine. Just in general.
And then we get into luxury taxes because it turns into a baseball system and you're like, what are we doing?
Yep.
Something tells me Syracuse doesn't have to worry about that. But you never know. You never know. That's going to be it for this edition of Troy News is an Absolute Podcast. Thank you again to our guest, Chris Carlson, for joining us and talking all things NIL, so we didn't have to talk about the two basketball losses that took place this week. If you are looking for that conversation, go to the website and read the articles. It sucked. That's pretty much all you need to know. For everybody that's listening, if you enjoyed this show, make sure you rate us, review us, give us 5 stars on the podcast platform of your choice. It helps us trick the computers into expanding the Ottoman Empire. If you are watching this or listening to this on newsmagician.com, we appreciate the support. Make sure you check out Chris Carlson's work on NIL's collectives at Syracuse. Those articles will be linked inside of the News Magician article, and make sure you follow Chris at his Twitter handle, which is also going to be tagged in this article and on the tweet, to get all of your Syracuse NIL news. Chris, I know that you are supposed to remain somewhat impartial here, but you are a Syracuse alum. We end every show in this way, so feel free to join in or abstain if necessary, but go Orange.
Go Orange.
Go Orange.